Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast live from Wimbledon. Myself, Catherine Whittaker, David Law, Matt Roberts. What I was going to say was live from our designated wonderful position at SW19 on the broadcast roof overlooking court number one, Henman Hill over there, centre court that way. And we are, for those of you joining us live on YouTube right now, you can see exactly where we are. We are looking at all of those things, but not quite in the position we intended. This is not our our permanent spot. We're in our wet weather position.
I mean, it might be our permanent spot if the weather keeps going like this. But yes, until about an hour ago, we were very much going to be in position A. We're now in position B, hastily erected.
Yeah, we're very pleased position B exists, folks. Yeah. But we have position A, which is, if anything, even nicer than position B. So
got that to look forward to.
Something to look forward to. Now, some of you are joining us live on YouTube. Some of you are listening to this as a podcast. Don't worry, for anybody listening as a podcast, we're not going to suddenly start referencing lots of things that you can't see. Although I might mention Matt's outfit today, yeah, because it is, of course, draw day. And Matt now has a trend of producing a knockout outfit for draw day.
I have something to live up to now. Mm. Although, unfortunately, my outfit is another consequence of the weather, and I've had to put my jumper on over my nice shirt.
Yeah, anyone tuning in to watch this on YouTube in hopes of seeing what dazzling shirt Matt produced for draw day are sorely disappointed right now. You're being a bit of a tease, Matt. But yeah, it was, of course, it is draw day today, yeah, at Wimbledon 2023. That's why Matt has a draw day look in his eyes.
I had such a good time.
Matt loves the Wimbledon draw. Tell us why you love the Wimbledon draw.
And I would say he loves the Wimbledon draw more this year than he ever has in the past, because it feels like it's gone up a level again. Tell us the backstory of your draw love.
Well, I think it probably starts with the fact that so many other draws are bad.
Name them.
Roland Garros, Australian Open, okay, US Open.
Why are they bad?
Well, Catherine would say it could partly because there's so much faff. There's so much unnecessary stuff. You know, for starters, here at the Wimbledon draw, they did not bring on a rugby player that we didn't recognise.
That was probably more on us than them, really.
No.
Come on.
No, there shouldn't be a rugby player at a tennis draw. No. But bring on someone else.
A tennis player.
Well, yeah.
Bring on nobody. Champ. Just get on with the draw, as they do here at Wimbledon.
Make a show of the draw.
Absolutely. The beauty of the Wimbledon draw is its simplicity. It has upgraded over the years. It was the first time it was streamed live on YouTube this year.
We started a fashion.
Yeah. It's all the thing, aren't you? Yeah.
And it was in the lovely new media theatre at Wimbledon. So, you know, it's been elevated over the years, but basically it's just drawing names out of a hat, one by one, with all the suspense that comes with that. And it's 45 minutes, nothing superfluous. It's just the draw, women's draw, followed by the men's draw. 10 out of 10, no notes. I could read it, I could see it, I could follow it. It was great. I had a great time, what can I say?
there was a little bit of audible accompaniment within the congregation that was there. I mean, I must admit, about 10 minutes into the draw, I was thinking back to Roland Garros, where the assembled media and guests were giving it the full ooh-la-la when two French players drew each other. But here there was utter silence in the room for the first 10 minutes. And then we got a couple of moments.
We did.
Are we going to go straight in with a couple of moments?
I think we probably should, really, don't you?
Sure. Let's go there.
Venus Williams against Elena Svitolina, round one.
Yeah, and the backstory is that yesterday, for Friends of the Tennis Podcast, we wanted to do a rehearsal of these live on-camera shows on YouTube. So we... Oh, a little... Has that ever happened before? There's a bird.
Yeah. There's a little bird that's just...
It's neither
up.
In shot nor... Oh,
now it's flown past my face. Just... We didn't arrange that.
The flora, fauna and wildlife of Wimbledon.
You did get stung by a bee on this roof.
Very, very close to where we're sitting right now.
During a podcast. Mm. And we kept it in.
Yeah. What was I saying?
Probably
we did a rehearsal podcast yesterday. Just a 20-minute off-the-cuff thing for Friends of the Tennis Podcast. People that we knew would be kind to us if it all went wrong. Which it didn't. There weren't too many teething problems to iron out. It was a lovely sunny day yesterday. So, yeah, there were no issues on that front. But one of the things that we discussed was who are the dangerous floaters in the draw, who are we intrigued as to where they land. And on the women's side, the two names are Elena Svitolina and Venus Williams. And lo and behold, they have landed next to one another. Dun, dun, dun. Did you audibly exclaim, Matt?
Yes, along with, as David said, kind of everyone in the room. Yeah. That was the gasp moment.
I was quite pleased about that as well, that people were that tuned in on how big a deal that those two are in this particular draw. Venus Williams obviously being 5-time champion and being 43 years of age, which is astounding to think that she can be doing this. And Elena Svitolina, who is recently back off maternity leave, has obviously got the whole backdrop of the horrors in her homeland going on at the moment, and yet back on the tour and winning tournaments, making waves. And so they were fascinating people to have in the draw. I mean, the chances of them facing each other in the first round must be so minimal, and yet here they are. So it was, you just got the sense all around you they knew this is a big deal.
I then tweeted, centre court.
It's got to be centre court, hasn't it? Do we have any sway around these parts now? How many times do we need to say it?
I mean, it's got to be a show court, at the very least. If it was court one, I'd be fine with that, really. I mean, I would like it to be centre.
Is it bottom half or top half, Matt? Who's that match going to be competing with?
That match is in the top half. The bottom half of the draw. The bottom half of the women's draw, which play on Monday.
So the bottom half of the women's draw obviously features Irina Sabalenka, who is the second seed. Her projected, this is all by seeding, her projected quarterfinal opponent would be Maria Sakkari. Also in the bottom half, defending champion Elena Rybakina. Her projected quarterfinal opponent, again by seeding, would be Ons Jabeur. And then in the top half, Iga Świątek against Coco Gauff. And Jessica Pegula against Caroline Garcia are the seeded quarterfinals. None of those are happening.
Yeah, the matches which definitely won't happen. But, I mean, that was, I think, the big takeaway from the women's draw is you did not want to be in that bottom half. That, for me, is absolutely stacked. Jabeur, Kvitova, Rybakina, Krejcikova, Mukova, Ostapenko, Sabalenka, all in that bottom half, which of course paves the way in the top half for Iga Świątek. And I think this is a great draw for her because, as I said, all of those names are in the other half, and the big names, the big seeds in her half are players that she's got a really good record against. Jessica Pegula, Coco Gauff, Caroline Garcia has beaten her before and would maybe be a bit tricky, but I'm not sure I expect Caroline Garcia to get to the semi-finals, given the form that she's been in. Belinda Bencic is also in there, another one with not much form. So I think Świątek needed a good draw on the grass. She's got some wins in Bad Homburg this week. I think her first top 50 win on grass this week. So she needed a good draw, and I really think she's got one.
And once the draw was done, and at that point the tournament, the club announced which halves of the draw men's and women's would play on Monday, and of course we know that it will be top half of the women's draw on Monday, i.e. Iga Świątek to play on Monday. Iga Świątek then withdrew from Bad Homburg.
Yeah.
Now, I've no idea. I'm quite sure there's something in the reason she withdrew. She said she was feeling unwell.
I think food poisoning,
bad night's sleep. But it's one of those where she's not going to risk anything, she's playing first day.
The degree of how unwell she feels is unknown, I think, in as much... I mean, you take her at a word, absolutely. But, I mean, I think there are a lot of players that have retired from matches over the last few days, to be honest with you. And I think it does highlight the issue of playing the very week before. They know what's at stake in a few days' time. And I think there are some players that really need the matches. They feel like they're underdone and they've got to get them in. There are others that I think maybe just feel so good they can just push on through. And there's a lot of players that just really want the Eastbourne title, the Bad Homburg title. They want those titles, and that's how they go about it. But a lot of players, I think, they've got Wimbledon in mind when they make these decisions. The way Iga Świątek tweeted, the details she went into sounded like she was pretty unwell to me, in terms of whether it's gastroenteritis or whatever it is, that can knock you off your feet. And you're going to... What are we on now? It's Friday. She's going to need a few days to feel okay. So, you know, fingers crossed that she does.
Mm. And Pam Shriver tweeted earlier that she actually thinks maybe the tours need to look into doing something about the number of withdrawals and retirements that you get in those tournaments the week before a slam, whether it be, you know, playing a tiebreak in the third set or something radical like sudden death deuce. I mean, I wouldn't want sudden death deuce, but I could maybe get on board with a tiebreak in the third set. But yeah, it's pretty unsatisfactory, especially for the women, to have a 500 event at Eastbourne. You know, so that's a pretty big event to have it so close to a slam. It's just indicative of the crazy tennis schedule, I suppose.
I'd support something being done, especially given the gap between the French Open and Wimbledon. Entirely understandable that Iga Świątek wants to have more than a week off after winning the French Open, but then that leaves her in the position of only being able to get grass court prep the week before the slam, which is it's not what she tends to do.
No.
I agree with you, David, the detail she's gone into, I'm not suggesting it's a made-up illness at all, but honestly, if it were, I get it, I support it. I think there should, as Matt says, as Pam says, I think there should be...
Some of those players will have definitely decided caution,
and
I'm
fine.
Not going to risk my chances. And even if I just feel a bit tired, I'm going to find a reason that I didn't play. And that does happen.
Let's talk about some of the other matches that have been... let's talk about some of the round one matches that have been thrown up here. And when I say some of, I mean one in particular, and that is Karolina Muchova against Julia Niemeyer, future Wimbledon champion Julia Niemeyer. If Hannah Wilkes, that manages our Twitter and is currently moderating our chat on YouTube, if you are in that chat, say hello to Hannah. We love Hannah. She thinks that Julia Niemeyer is a future Wimbledon champion. And who am I to say she's wrong? She looked like she had the goods here this time last year, and possibly the worst unintended consequence for everybody on the WTA Tour of Wimbledon not being able to award ranking points last year is that Julia Niemeyer has been unseeded and a dangerous floater at every Grand Slam since then. And nobody wants to face her in round one, not least Karolina Muchova,
who hasn't played a match since Roland Garros in the final. I mean, that's a big ask, isn't it? Really, to come out cold onto grass. and face a player with that sort of game.
And I realised today a sort of new element of the Mukova curse, which hopefully she's over, having reached the French Open
what
final.
What have you found now?
Well, she's cursed in round one of slams. She gets really tough draws. She had Simona Halep here last year in the first round. She had Ila Tomjanovic, first round of the US Open last year. She obviously had Maria Sakkari, first round in Roland Garros, which she did manage to win. And now she's got, you know, one of the most dangerous unseeded players in Niemeyer.
I think that's horrible. As somebody that was so excited to see Mukova play on grass after the French Open, and I really like Niemeyer, I think she's a fun, unknown-ish quantity in the draw. That really worries me for Mukova. I'd like them both to have a run, and draws being what they are, that is now impossible.
I mean, that'd be a great fourth round match, wouldn't it? If that had ended up
absolutely
there, you know, probably in a year or two, Niemeyer may well be seeded and end up meeting Mukova in the fourth round, maybe even the quarterfinals. So, but I also do love this. I know that you're going to lose somebody good and you may end up losing a top seed, but I love the jeopardy of it all. I love going into the first round of a Grand Slam with massive stakes immediately. And it's going to be brilliant.
Where would you put that match? Quarterfinalist last year, Niemeyer. French Open finalist, Mukova.
I'd probably be putting it on court two, I think, honest with you. Maybe even the next one. Is it 18 is the next one?
Three.
I'd probably put it on one of those. They're brilliant courts. They're more intimate. They're still show courts. But, I mean, I suppose it depends what they're up against. But that's my feeling.
Hannah wants that one on centre. She she tweeted about that. Also, while we're on Hannah, and you mentioned that she is moderating the chat, I'm sure that there are people in the chat, not that we're looking at it, I'm sure there are people correcting me, because Venus and Svitolina are in the top half.
So they will play Monday?
Yeah.
Right. Other round one matches that jump out when you look through the women's draw, Maria Sakkari against Marta Kostyuk. She keeps on being in headline-grabbing round-one matches, Marta Kostyuk, doesn't she? Of course, Arina Sabalenka in Paris.
And so does Maria Sakkari.
And so does Maria Sakkari, indeed. Veronika Kudermetova against Kaya Kanepi. Look, someone has to draw Kaya Kanepi in round-one of a slam.
It's a nightmare, isn't it?
I mean, Kanepi is just delighted she got a seed.
Yeah,
she's
more
likely to win.
We've got Shelby Rogers against Elena Rybakina. I'm interested in that because Shelby Rogers doesn't make much sense to me as a tennis player. She can pop up and be so interesting and so much fun and so much of a disruptor. You know, she still sticks out in my mind as the person that figured out Ash Barty. The person that found the Ash Barty kryptonite.
With the moon balls.
With the moon balls.
That was the Emma Raducanu year, wasn't
it? Yeah, there's really something to Shelby Rogers. But she can also sort of disappear for weeks and months on end. So I don't quite know what phase of her career she's in just at the moment. But I also don't know where Elena Rybakina is at. I really, really don't. Having withdrawn from Eastbourne, still suffering with this virus that caused her to withdraw from the French Open, I think she's good enough that she can win matches here even if she's significantly depleted.
Yeah.
But don't know, it's a worry.
Well, there's no data, recent data on her, is there? Because she was in as good a form as you could be in during Roland Garros until that withdrawal. And we've seen her play Donovekic and lose, a match I watched. And she did look pale and short of energy and wasn't really getting to the ball in quite the same way, I didn't feel, making a lot of unforced errors. You know, I often marvel at the way somebody who's hitting the ball that hard, that flat, is still as precise as she is, because she does it also easily. It seems to come to her easily, the foundations of those strokes. But yeah, I mean, that is a tough first round draw, I think, because she may well be nervous. You'd understand it if she was, and who knows how fit she is. And so yeah, Shelby Rogers is dangerous.
And even if she does come through that, Elise Cornet is lurking potentially in round two.
Defending champion,
goodness, she would, wouldn't she? She loved being she loved having the opportunity to be the one to break Iga Świątek's streak last year,
and
it showed, and she did it.
Last year, the ultimate
disruptor. Heather Watson against Barbora Krejcikova also jumps out from round one, doesn't it? That's going to get a big court, isn't it? Barbora Krejcikova, a member of the new Big Four, obviously.
It's barely won a match since. But she did have a run in Birmingham.
She reached the final against Ostapenko, didn't she?
Yeah, so she's got some reps on the grass. I sort of think that Krejcikova should be able to play really well on grass. I think it's the slam where she hasn't really had the results. I don't think she's got past the fourth round here. But yeah, she feels a bit like a sort of sleeping giant at the moment. Like, we know how good Krejcikova can be.
Yes.
And it's just sort of wake up.
She's a dormant volcano.
Yeah.
I've piggybacked on your excellent analogy, Matt, there. Very good.
Yeah, and also I would say a match that I got slightly lost in the draw because it came just after Venus and Svitolina were drawn, was Coco Gauff starting against Sofia Kenin.
Ooh.
Which very much should be a gasp-inducing match, but
Kenin qualified.
But we were still
she?
Gasping from Venus Svitolina.
It took a few minutes for Matt to cotton on that was happening, and then to let me know about it, because I tend to zone out a bit during the draw. We always have to get Matt to live tweet the draw because I struggle.
It's too much. I'm with you. Too much.
I'm like, Matt, what's
I end up spectating Matt's face rather than the actual
draw. It's like
when
I'm watching a movie with my wife, and I say, "What's going on?" And that was a bit like that with you during the draw.
Kenin qualified, beat Taylor Townsend in the final round of qualifying.
That's rough for Gauff, I think. Someone that's come through qualifying, a Grand Slam champion that's come through qualifying.
But she's had some matches this week, hasn't she, Gauff? I know she lost to Madison Keys, I think.
Today, yeah.
But, you know, she's had a couple of wins.
She's obviously, very unfortunately for Coco Gauff, fallen in Iga Świątek's quarter again, which we'd love to believe that she could turn that head-to-head around, that she could make a dent in it, that she could try and make it interesting. But there are just no signs, really, of that being the case. So that is kind of disastrous for Coco Gauff and brilliant for Iga Świątek.
I just find Świątek so interesting in every round, though, because like, normally, if she plays Coco Gauff, I'm just assuming foregone conclusion, Świątek wins. But because of this surface, it just makes it interesting to me.
Yeah, and as always with these quarterfinals projections, the fact that if these matches end up happening, the fact that they've got to the quarterfinals means that a lot of the question marks we're currently talking about in relation to them will have been eliminated.
That's true.
Because they've got to the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
Given what you've said about how good a draw this is for Iga Świątek, given everything we've said about the question marks hanging over everyone else, you know where I'm going. They know where I'm going. Is Iga Świątek going to win Wimbledon? Is she the favourite for Wimbledon?
I would pick her at the moment to win Wimbledon, yeah, I would. Because of how stacked that bottom half of the draw is, how I think if Elena Rybakina had come in with zero health question marks, I'd have gone with her. Because to me, she is so perfectly put together as a tennis player, as an athlete. And we saw last year, mentally, she can handle it. I'd have gone with her. But there are too many question marks for me. And I don't question Świątek's mindset. I suppose I have to look at her health now that she's withdrawn from this event. Yes, it might not be serious, but it might be. But I still think, given how straightforward that draw is, relatively speaking, compared to that bottom half of the draw, I think she's going deep. And so, yeah, I'd pick her. What about you?
I hadn't made up my mind at the time of asking the question. That was quite a compelling argument you just made.
I
found that really persuasive.
You'd have thought it, that I could come up with that.
I share all your view. It would have been Rybakina. It would have been Rybakina. She wouldn't have had to do much in preparation for me to consider her the favourite. But she doesn't look right to me. This doesn't sound good on the health front. I think she's there for the taking. I don't think she's just going to lose to anybody. But it sounds to me like she would be there for the taking in the early rounds if she comes up against an inspired opponent. I'm looking at Sabalenka. I feel like Sabalenka has done more at Wimbledon than Iga Swiatek. She's a Grand Slam champion now. I feel like the next person I look to should be Aryna Sabalenka. Mm. And yet I found you very compelling there, David.
Mm. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm not even sure that I put Sabalenka confidently ahead of some of the other players that are in there.
Ooh,
like
who?
Petra Kvitova, for instance.
Oh, don't Kvitova
me. I've done it again.
Where is she, Matt? Where is she?
I mean,
although, does it even matter where she is? Because no. The thing with Kvitova is she can beat anyone. She can beat anyone
she's
here.
She's got an Ons
Jabeur. She turns it on.
Yeah, she's got an Ons Jabeur potential fourth round. And then the winner of that could potentially play Rybakina or Ostapenko or Haddad Maia, David.
Don't throw these names.
But that's it. All of these names are in that bottom
Where's
half.
Where's Blumin Samsonova? She's a nightmare as well. Where's...
Alexandrova is another one.
Oh.
Well,
always beats people we've picked.
I would say on Iga Swiatek, I think, given the way this draw has come out, I think it's possible that Iga Swiatek would get to the final and, you know, would be playing well, and yet we would still have a question mark over whether she can really beat one of her top rivals on grass. Because they're all in the other half. I mean, I know there's Pegula and Goff and Garcia, but just matchup-wise, I just back Swiatek in those matches. It's the Sabalenka, it's the Rybakina, it's Mukova even, it's a peaking Petra Kvitova, you know, a great Ons Jabeur. That's what we haven't seen Iga Swiatek do on grass. And we're not going to see her do that until potentially the final. So I think it, you know, we could be sitting here in a couple of weeks' time with real question marks still over Iga Swiatek, and yet she's gone really deep in the tournament. I don't know if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, well, if that means we're sitting here in 2 weeks previewing a Swiatek-Rybakina or a Swiatek-Sabalenka final, then sign me up.
Mm. Absolutely. And in that situation...
Or Swiatek-Jabeur.
In that situation, I'd probably still be leaning Sabalenka or Rybakina.
No, that's interesting. Because they might have answered the questions by then.
They'd have had to go through some real tests.
Sabalenka did beat some people on clay that I didn't expect her to beat at Roland Garros, for instance. But, yeah, I think the Swiatek story reminds me a little bit of the US Open when she came into that tournament a lot hanging over and question marks. And I don't even think she was playing that well by her standards. She still won the thing.
Mm.
Yeah, that's true. And I definitely underestimated Swiatek at the US Open.
Stop making good points, David.
No, 11 years we've been doing this because, and suddenly I've cracked it.
Well, it's because now that we're live, we're not allowed to argue.
Yeah, you can argue, it's fine.
We can't edit arguments out. So you've got to just keep saying things that I agree with.
That's going to last about 4 minutes.
Look, we're less than halfway into episode one. Yeah. Give us time, folks. Yeah. Give us time. Before we go on to talk about the men's draw, while we're on all things women's tennis, an explanation of why I wasn't at the draw, and that was because I was hosting a very special WTA event marking the 50th anniversary of the formation of the WTA in the very place where the WTA was formed by Billie Jean King and 64 founding members. I actually have on my laptop right now a copy of the minutes from that first ever meeting where the vote went through to form the WTA. 64 attendees at the meeting. Betty Stover being sent to guard the door because she was the most physically towering presence. She, in the words of Billie Jean King at today's event to mark this anniversary, she said the media all thought that she was at the door preventing them getting in. She was stopping all of us getting out.
And at the thing today, they've got the picture of her on that door, life size, to show it. It was fantastic.
Mm. It was great. 13 of the founding members of the WTA, including Billie Jean King, Rosie Casals, Alana Kloss, Françoise Dürr, Ingrid Benser, who was a mother at the time of the formation of the WTA, lots of others as well. It was a a really, really special event. Sloane Stephens came, as did Tatiana Maria and her two daughters. And Sloane Stephens spoke on behalf of current players, and good on her for doing that.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure lots were invited and very understandably weren't able to carve out time ahead of Wimbledon preparations, and Sloane Stephens did.
Yeah, showed it mattered to her.
Yeah, it did, and she was engaged throughout the whole thing. It went on for a while because 13 women with a lot to say.
And they were catching up.
Yeah. And she was engaged throughout. You know, she was sat there on the front row and I was looking at her, and it was a great thing to be a part of, and important that we remember these things. 50 years since the WTA was formed. I know there's a long way to go, but goodness me. In my intro to the event, I talked through what the landscape for women was like in 1973, and women couldn't get a credit card in their own name. They had to have their husband's cosign if they wanted to get a credit card. You could be legally fired for getting pregnant, and yet there was Billie Jean King forming a women's tennis association, founding professional women's tennis 3 years before. Extraordinarily ahead of their time, and an important thing to mark. And the reason that I am incredibly dressed up, you're probably thinking, Catherine really doesn't understand how people are supposed to dress for YouTube
and
for
podcasts.
YouTube live events. But I was dressed for that and have come straight from it, and I'm just...
Yeah. I just always wear a blazer. You know.
Yeah.
I've
seen David in that exact outfit sort of at the beach.
Yeah. Yeah. David doesn't do casual. And for anybody listening to the podcast saying you promised us you wouldn't do visuals, check out our social media. There'll be pictures of all of this on there.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. On to the men's draw. What are our takeaways?
Well, I think the second gasp needs describing, Matt.
Yes, well, we were all waiting for Andy Murray, of course. He was the most interesting unseeded player, I think, in that draw. Where was he going to be? And the name Ryan Peniston came out, and then the name Andy Murray came out. So that was a minor gasp, I would say, because, you know, the Brits were interested in that. They weren't ooh-la-la-ing.
They were, but sort of, their Frenchness was coming through. Yeah.
If that had been a Parisian equivalent, can you imagine how bananas...
People would have been fainting have in the room, I'm telling you.
Yeah, but that was then followed by Dominic Thiem against Stefanos Tsitsipas. So you had Andy Murray's name, Dominic Thiem's name, and Stefanos Tsitsipas's name next to each other in the draw. And that is definitely worthy of gasp. And also, going back to the rehearsal little show that we did for Friends yesterday, we were talking about, you know, what possible draw we might like for Andy Murray. And I think we sort of settled on winnable first match, and then
Tsitsipas in the second round.
Literally.
I mean, we went with top seed who's uncomfortable on grass, and the names Rude and Tsitsipas just rolled off.
Extremely distracted, loved up top seed in the second round.
Who's not really done a lot here.
No, even in the most focused of times. Yeah. Look. Maybe love will propel Stefanos Tsitsipas to a Wimbledon title, but form in Mallorca and generalised social media activity suggests
and
not
also,
to me. Good luck to him. He seems extremely happy.
And not working with Mark Philippoussis, who I thought was good for him generally, but also has great know-how on these services. Look, Stefanos Tsitsipas should be a good grass court player. So far, he's just... I think he won the one title, didn't he, last year? But he doesn't feel like a grass court player yet. He doesn't do the things that he needs to be able to do to excel on it, I don't think. And yet he's capable. The movements, all the strokes, they should be there. And I just think overall that if Andy Murray did manage to play against him in the second round, and frankly if he played against Thiem as well, even though these are illustrious names, it's a heck of a good time to get them.
I mean, Murray, you know, he hasn't won a tour level match since Indian Wells. He didn't look good at Queens, but we sort of caveated that with it was the end of his great run on the Challenger Tour, winning 10 matches on the grass. I think if Murray was in the sort of form that he was in at the start of the year, where he got those wins over Zverev and Berrettini, I'd be pretty confident of him beating Tsitsipas in the second round after getting through Peniston. I'm a little less confident than I would have been at the start of the year, but I think I do back Murray.
Yeah, I think this is a great draw for Andy Murray. Not necessarily to win the thing or reach a quarterfinal. I'm trying not to look too far ahead. But I think, given he could have got Novak Djokovic in round one, I think this is really good. I know Ryan Peniston is tricky. I've seen him be a real pest to a lot of people on grass at Queens this year and last year. I don't think he will be that pest to Andy Murray. I don't think his pestiness...
Because of game style or because of the aura of playing Murray?
Well, I was thinking game style. I think the aura of playing Murray perhaps will be a factor as well. Right. It'll surely be on centre court. I do think that would be a factor. I think Ryan Peniston is a lovely bloke, but I don't think he's... I don't think he's going to say... No, I'm the man, not Andy Murray. I don't think he's that guy, you know. I think he's... check out this guy down the other end. He's won two Wimbledon titles. I think he's that guy.
I think Murray will be seriously anxious and nervous on the day. Not because of anything other than how much it means to him that he's playing a British guy. He knows he's meant to win and he knows he's meant to perform, because this is almost the whole point of the comeback and all this effort. He's going to be really tight for the first...
I could imagine a dodgy first set from Andy Murray, but I think Peniston will be tight too.
Yeah, it'd be interesting what mindset low, they can get
low quality
into.
First set coming up, folks. Yeah, I just don't...
They'll still hype it up.
I don't think that the low bounce of Ryan Peniston and the leftiness... He's got a not dissimilar game style to Cam Norrie in that the forehand and backhand are quite different in terms of the look they give you. Far flatter backhand, spinnier forehand. I just don't think that disrupts Andy Murray in the way that it disrupts other players. Look, Andy Murray might just not play very well. He was bad at Queen's. As Matt says, he's not won a tour level match since Indian Wells. He could just be bad at the moment. We don't really know.
Gosh, who would have thought that out of the names Peniston, Murray, Tsitsipas and Thiem, we wouldn't talk about Thiem. We've talked more about Peniston. Maybe Thiem's going to come
Thiem
through.
Dominic Thiem lost in the first round of a clay court challenger last week, Matt.
I'm still trying to make it happen.
Yeah,
it's
he did.
Less
yeah.
likely to happen here than anywhere else, isn't
it? Is.
It?
But maybe
yeah,
that's
I mean,
it's
we'd be worried about
happen.
Him losing first round in his heyday at Wimbledon, wouldn't we?
Oh, Dominic.
I'm still glad he's here. I mean, I'm still going to be there for Tsitsipas against Thiem. I'm going to be right there.
Yes.
Yeah, me too. They are in the top half of the draw, which is, of course, where we find Carlos Alcaraz, because he leapfrogged Novak Djokovic to world number one just in time for Wimbledon seeding by virtue of winning the Queen's title on Sunday.
And I know that Robert in the Wimbledon Library would have been was gutted about that, because he had his stat lined up that he'd already told me. He said, unless Alcaraz wins Queens, and we were thinking, well, that's, you know, that might happen, but it's unlikely. He's not that experienced on grass. Djokovic would have been the top seed here, I think, for the ninth time, which would have been a record. No one's ever been top seed at Wimbledon nine times, but scuppered by Carlos Alcaraz.
And yet Djokovic probably couldn't be happier about it, given the way the
given
draws
the draw,
turned
yeah.
out.
It is a great draw for Novak Djokovic, isn't it? It's a cracking draw.
I mean, it was quite hard to imagine a difficult draw for him, but...
Because he's that good.
Because he's that good.
Yeah,
he's
I mean,
so
look,
superior, especially on this surface, to everyone else.
I don't think there was any draw that would have made me not think he's going to win this thing.
But it would have been interesting had he got Alcaraz's draw.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which it
but
is less so now.
Yeah.
It is a particularly good draw.
I think so. I mean, I tweeted that and someone came back saying, you know, there's potentially Hurkacz in the fourth round, who has pushed him at Wimbledon. There's potentially Kyrgios in the quarterfinal, who, you know, pushed him a bit in that final last
still
year.
Still has a winning record against
Kyrgios.
Still has a winning record
fit.
Against him. Well, I was going to give my rebuttal to this guy, whoever he was. And then there was Sinner in the semi-final, who took him to five sets last year. And Hurkacz does not really play well in slams, other than one run here. Kyrgios is not fit. And Sinner's never been to the semis of a major. So... I stand by. This is a great draw for Novak Djokovic. A lot of, I think, Medvedev and Rune, Zverev, even all landing in the other half. I think they were potential names that I might have thought could threaten him. But as I said,
mean, there's Rui Savori is there as a potential third round opponent. He can play on grass, but I don't quite understand why Emil Rui Savori isn't happening. More something isn't quite happening for him. He's still young. There's plenty of time,
and he's got an interesting round one.
Stan Wawrinka.
Yeah, a
couple of names that I would quite like to see face Djokovic in that first three rounds. Personally, I'd like to see Jordan Thompson play him in the second round, because he's a proper grass court player who will come at him. You know, I would like to see that. I think it's early enough that maybe Djokovic isn't quite zoned in yet. And I remember him losing first set against Jack Draper a few years ago in the first round. I'd also like to see him play Stan Wawrinka for old time's sake. I mean, my theory is that if Wawrinka got to that point, he'd have played his way in a little bit. You know,
he'd be knackered.
He'll be doing well. He's diesel. He can keep going.
He hasn't been that. He's been a bit petrolly
I've still
recently.
Got 2012 through 2016 in my mind. That's the problem for the Wawrinka Djokovic matches, which was one of my favourite ever rivalries.
So seeing them scheduled to meet in a slam at sort of early-ish stages was a real mark it in your calendar moment. In a tennis draw.
And if they ended up meeting each other in the final, you know, you're plotting it through and thinking the way Stan's playing, and there have been so many examples of it, particularly at the Australian Open, I would just love to see it. But
Stan Wawrinka is a Wimbledon title away from a career slam.
He is.
Throw that out there.
I think I'm probably being a little bit optimistic that he will be anything like that level, aren't I? But still, you never know, do you?
But I'd be worried if you weren't being optimistic.
Yes. I believe in you, Stan.
Who? Anybody else, David, if you're being optimistic for interest? Bublik, fourth round opponent for Djokovic?
In the whole quarter of the draw, I find Bublik the most interesting name for Djokovic. I mean, Kyrgios, on the face of things, is, but
he's not fit.
He can't be fit, given the matches he's... Well, the one match he played and the subsequent withdrawals.
Yeah.
I just don't see how he can be. Now, he might be able to play his way in, but he's had a serious surgery, you know, 6 months ago. He's been off for so long, so I can't imagine it. But Bublik, unfortunately for him, has the Haller curse that Matt has told us all about.
This is true.
Which means that he...
is going out in round one.
Going out in round one, if history tells us anything.
Unless he's Roger Federer, which...
But if he...
Mackenzie McDonald is actually quite tricky. Hasn't he been to the fourth round here before?
Can't remember.
I'm going to confidently say... I commentated on Mackenzie McDonald beating Milos Raonic here.
Okay. Let's imagine that's not the case.
He was playing today, Mackenzie McDonald. So he must be in the semis of...
Oh, with Eastbourne.
Yeah.
Right.
Assuming Bublik gets past McDonald, I think Bublik against Djokovic would be great to watch. Like, I agree. Would I prefer to see that maybe more than him against Rublev Djokovic?
Yes.
I think probably I would, given that Rublev...
I'm not sure I ever want to watch Rublev Djokovic.
That was an Australian Open match, wasn't it, this year, and it was a really tough watch. I mean, Rublev has done better since. He's won Monte Carlo. He's had some results, but they haven't been on grass.
But he was playing really well in Australia.
Yeah.
He's not there against Djokovic.
And he's not as good as Djokovic. No. Djokovic is just too good.
He knows it, doesn't he? Casper Ruud is in the third quarter, so the top of the bottom, if you like. I mean, everyone in that section must be delighted, right? Because he's fourth seed, and yet, does anybody think he's doing anything?
I did hear an interview with Casper Ruud in which he said, and actually, this is quite relatable. He said that his motivation for doing well at Wimbledon is that the weekend, who he's clearly obsessed with, have got some gigs in London over the first weekend of the tournament, and he wants to be in the draw long enough to be able to see them. He's planning his trips around his favourite artist.
He's such a fan of the weekend that if he lost on Tuesday, he couldn't be bothered to hang around for 3 days for the concert. That's questionable commitment, I would say.
Well, he has already seen them twice in the last week.
He's been doing nothing but going to concerts since the French Open.
Given the amount he's been watching that particular band and having seen the videos,
person.
I think... Oh, is it a person?
It's a person.
Is it a surname?
Wait till he finds out how it's spelled.
Oh, no.
We're on YouTube now, David.
We've got to be more with it.
Have we? We can't edit this out anymore, can we? Not that we would, because I don't care.
Hang on. These gigs he's been going to, is it all been the weekend?
Yes, yeah.
He's just been on tour with the weekend
since
the French Open.
Twice.
I've never seen him more effusive about anything.
He's been living his best life.
He's having the time of his life. No, I'm seriously... He could do a hole-in-one on that winged foot golf course that he played and he would not get as excited about as he did singing whatever verse Weekend or his mates were singing.
Look, I support people being happy. Casper Ruud, living his best life, playing golf and going to gigs. Stefanos Tsitsipas doing whatever he's doing with Paolo Badosa. Lovely stuff. I just don't, you know, in terms of threats at Wimbledon, no.
Is it not good, though, to maybe... take the pressure off and just release the pressure.
You think it's
valve.
All a big pressure release tactic maybe, from Casper Ruud?
Maybe he's thinking, I come into Wimbledon and I just freewheel it.
Yep. Imagine. Could work. Can I draw your attention to though, David, his potential second round opponent?
Constant Lestien. Yes, you can.
David was genuinely loving
of the draw. I forgot there was a fourth gasp, and that was just me when Liam Brody against Constant Lestien came out. I mean, that's got five sets written all over it, and I am going to be there. Unless I'm on commentary, you can put me on commentary if you like, because I want to be there.
David's bosses, right? If you're watching or listening. Yeah, David wants to be on the real headline match of Constant Lestienne against Liam Brody. Yes, Denis Shapovalov is in that section of the draw. We just don't talk about him anymore, do we? He's not a thing.
Maybe this is.
Can't believe you brought him up.
But imagine he's in the Casper Ruud section.
Imagine if he makes himself relevant by going.
Well, this is an opportunity to do that. He's in a good section. I don't feel it in my bones. Taylor Fritz is in this quarter.
He needs a good Wimbledon, I think. Taylor Fritz. He's an Eastbourne champion in the past. He got to the quarterfinals here last year, and since then his slam results have been poor, and he's got a bit of a tricky first round match, I believe. Hanfman, who is doing well, certainly the last time I checked Mallorca was doing well and had that great tournament in Rome just a few weeks ago.
He's been in some good Hanfman. Form.
He is. I think that's tough for Fritz, but Fritz, he needs to start doing better in slams.
I can't put my finger on it about Taylor Fritz. I don't think he looks in the best place. I've been seeing interviews with him. I interviewed him myself, and he was saying all the right things. Mm. Can't actually quite remember who he lost to at Queen's, but he lost early. I just think something's not quite balanced.
He played golf with Casper Ruud. He was
the bringing
one.
Up Casper Ruud. He's going to be out in first round.
That's what he did as his sort of build-up. He went and played golf with Casper Ruud, so maybe he's releasing the pressure valve. Just in terms of the serious point you make, though, I just wonder whether maybe he is feeling the pressure in as much as he so wants it. He's been vocal about it. He's alluded with his game to the idea that he's at that level, that he's a contender for going to a Wimbledon final or a US Open final. And he lost to Brandon Holt, didn't he, in the first round at the US Open last year. And he was so devastated because he really wants this. He's not leaving any stone unturned. He's doing all the right things, I think, from everything I can see. And he's got the ambition, and he's talking about it. And that's what I want to see. But I do think that is likely to leave you disappointed if you go anywhere other than as far as you want. And there probably is a line that you can't really afford to cross in terms of being that pumped up. And that's me saying that. But you know what I mean? I just feel as though maybe he needs to find a way to let it go a little bit and let it happen. That's my only theory.
Yeah, and I hope he does. I just don't feel like it's now. I think that's really tricky. Opening round for Taylor Fritz. Yes, one of our lights has quite literally gone out. Literally rather than metaphorically, we're still very much still with you. There was always a risk of this happening. It's due to wet weather position faff.
Yes, it is.
We were prepared for such an event. I think we've handled wet weather position very calmly and very
agreed.
Well.
Agreed. Just like agreed.
That it's back.
Would this be a bad time to point out that it never actually rained?
It did in the build-up while we were setting up.
It didn't
we
really.
Feel like Wimbledon when really they got rain. The centre court roof built and then they didn't get a chance to press the button and use it because it was blooming sunny all week.
Yeah.
And we, 2 hours ago, it was going to rain. We checked three apps.
Yeah.
And here we are, undercover. We've moved the entire thing.
We are practicing what we preach, though, because we always get annoyed at tennis tournaments that have roofs and don't
preemptively close them when weather forecasting is available.
When they know it's going to rain.
But the reason they don't do that is because weather forecasting is so darned inaccurate, which is
which we are
most certainly
today.
The case.
There was a BBC
anyway.
Glitch, and it was saying it was going to be 8 degrees all week. And fortunately, that wasn't correct.
Fingers crossed. A couple of other bits of news that have broken over the course of the last day or so here at Wimbledon. One in particular, which is the intended comeback of former world number one Australian Open champion Caroline Wozniacki. She announced yesterday she'll be back for the US hardcourt swing. She thinks she can win the US Open.
Good luck to her. Well, I mean, somebody on Twitter reminded me that she was the opponent of Kim Clijsters, who did exactly that, came back and won the US Open, beating her in the final. I suppose I'm not that surprised now that it's happened. I, the way she spoke, she was quite categoric about stopping and it seeming like that was it. But she's been around tennis a lot the last couple of years. She was here last year, I remember, doing commentary work. I think we had her on our radio station, BBC Radio. And she clearly still loves the game, has a massive appetite for it. And I do think she's seen others that have gone away, had kids, and then come back to play, and it's just been great for them, and they've loved it, and they've been successful. And she's still young, isn't she? I mean, going to struggle with age, I don't think. She's ready to go. So whether a game can go with her is another matter, you know, as the game moved on at all.
Well, the thing is, at the time that she retired, she had dropped off a bit from her peak threat. But maybe that's because she'd lost the hunger a little bit, and she had one eye on retirement and perhaps having children, getting married, having children. I think she'd already got married, hadn't she, while she was on tour. So it will be interesting to test that. I think good luck to her. If anybody wants to come back, retire, do whatever they want, that's totally... It's a very, very personal thing. I do think she had a great retirement. She had a really great moment in Australia. It felt very right. And she actually referenced that yesterday, didn't she, when talking about the decision to make this comeback, how lovely her retirement moment was down in Melbourne. They played Sweet Caroline, didn't they, on the court. But I suppose she'll always have that, won't she? Yeah. You know, regardless of what happens. So makes things interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. She's a good name to be coming back into the tournaments and the scene generally.
We have had some quotes from Andy Murray emerging. I'm sure there'll be plenty more of those tomorrow. Tomorrow, of course, is Media Day, Saturday, at Wimbledon. We will be doing a post-Media Day show, podcast as usual. It'll be live on YouTube at what time, David?
Around 4:30.
The reason we're not being quite specific about this yet is because we're hoping to time it so that we can get a couple, one, maybe two, live player drop-ins to the show. So we're just leaving ourselves a little bit of wiggle room to move the time to make that most likely to happen.
Well, we've moved the entire setup because of rain that didn't happen, so, you know.
But around about 4:30, keep your eye on social media and we will confirm the time very soon indeed, once the times are through for Media Day. So all the players will be coming through the press conference room tomorrow. We'll be speaking to them. We'll be coming to you on a podcast afterwards. One of those players will be Andy Murray. He's already done some media, hasn't he? There was a piece in the Telegraph today about a bit of a story that's been rumbling in the background over the course of the past few days and weeks about a poster that Wimbledon released as part of a series of promotional posters in the lead up to this tournament. And this particular poster was to promote rivalries of the past and of the future in the sport. And the big three were pictured: Djokovic, Federer, Nadal. Andy Murray wasn't there. Jamie Murray, a few days or weeks ago, time is concertinaed somewhat recently, not quite sure when it was, he said he was displeased with the fact that Andy Murray didn't feature in that rivalry depiction. That was put to Andy Murray over the past couple of days, and he said he did have issues with the poster, but not with the fact that he wasn't in it. He said he thought it was a bit strange with the arrangement of men at the front and women at the back. At the very front of the poster was Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner, and at the back was Iga Świątek and Elena Rybakina, and that was what Andy Murray took issue with.
Yeah, and he said somewhat sarcastically, yeah, it's a disaster, isn't it? Sort of, I think he thinks it's been blown up a bit unnecessarily, and it is one of those that when you see the tweets about it from Jamie, then people inevitably come in and say, well, where's Steffi Graf and where's Pete Sampras and where's Andre Agassi, and on it can go. You're kind of in a no-win position, I think, if you are a tournament doing that. Yes, personally, I think that order would have been better if it wasn't men at the front in that way. But then, as you said, it is part of a series, and an earlier one that they'd put together and put out, which I think was talking about trailblazers of the sport, had mostly women in the forefront. So, and I think that you know, that also needs to be remembered.
There's going to be some questions fired at these players tomorrow, aren't there? There's all sorts of... There's going to be a lot of Saudi Arabia. Let's brace ourselves for that.
Well, judging by today's press conference that you were moderating, Catherine, or the event that you were moderating, Billie Jean King was receiving questions about Saudi Arabia and the interest that the state is showing in investing in sport generally and more recently tennis. And it was interesting that Steve Simon, the WTA CEO, was there, and he actually took the microphone to be, I thought, quite open. Oh, boy, there's rain in the air. I can just feel it. Fantastic. But he was quite keen, I think, to say that yes, we have been talking to Saudi Arabia. We are talking to them, and they've made great strides, in his words. But there's still a heck of a lot that needs to be looked at before we would consider doing business with them. But you're right. I mean, that move is coming in terms of interest, and it is going to proliferate from everything we're seeing. And you're right, the players are going to get asked, just as Carlos Alcaraz was at Queen's when he won the title.
Yeah, and we will be bringing you all of it tomorrow on the show and trying to arrange our thoughts on it all. We've got circa 21 hours to do that, folks. Good luck to all of us. Hopes and prayers. Right, we have a Wimbledon mascot. Introducing Erin. Erin is a cat. Erin is owned by Daryl, who has had Tennis Podcast mascots before. Daryl is a prolific Tennis Podcast mascotter. Remembering the dearly departed Gerald, who
marvelous cat.
Was a marvellous cat and a big part of the show for a long time. Now we have Erin. Got to say, Erin, beautiful as she is, doesn't look thrilled to be to be the Wimbledon mascot. Certainly not in this photo that I'm looking at. She's a handsome feline. But yeah, I mean, cats never look thrilled about anything, do they?
Yes, Daryl managed to get Gerald to do some Wimbledon poses in the past, and I don't think Erin's going to be.
Erin looks
gonna
like
be so keen.
She's going to take some coaxing.
But Erin will live life on her terms.
Yeah,
we lay down that gauntlet to you, Daryl. We welcome Wimbledon related photo shoots with Erin. Let's see how that goes. We have our mascots. David's got Maisie.
Right, Maisie.
I've got Xenia. Hello, Xenia. And Matt's got Darwin.
Hello, Darwin.
We are all anxious about what to do with Petra Kvitova.
Yeah, and Elena Rybakina.
Maisie and I are going to discuss it.
So much to be anxious about. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
Yes, we have Scott Fleming, who is from Scotland.
Like Colin Fleming.
Yes.
Also from Scotland.
Yes. And Scott, quote, works in tennis and gave Catherine and Matt some fudge last year in Melbourne.
I remember that.
Scott says, I've been too nervous / awkward to ask if they enjoyed it. Definitely enjoyed
Definitely,
it,
Definitely, yes. I think it came, if I recall, Scott, at a very welcome time. I think sugar was required.
Yes.
Where's my fudge?
You were in Solihull, David.
Yeah.
I wasn't there. And you didn't think to bring any back? No. Okay, fine.
Not sure how well fudge travels.
Scott, don't worry.
Anyway,
it's all right.
Scott.
I'll get over it.
Thank you very much for both the fudge and for being a shout-out friend of the podcast. Like Scott Draper, Queen's Clamp champion.
Of 1998. Catherine, that is genius.
Thank you very much.
We've also got Chris Wiley, who is in Cambridge.
Like Jordan Wiley.
Hey!
Different spelling, but still sounds the same.
And Chris Lewis.
Chris Lewis, the 1983 runner-up to John McEnroe.
Correct.
Mm. Yes.
Was that a match that featured in our top 10 worst Grand Slam finals?
It did, yeah. It did. Oh, pandemic content.
Yeah, worst week.
Thank you, Chris.
And finally, we've got Carrie Hopkins in Springfield, Illinois.
Oh, Springfield is the capital of Illinois. That's a thing that I know.
Yeah, I don't know any tennis Carries, I don't think.
Carrie Soto.
Yes, again, different spelling.
A fictional tennis Carrie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the author Taylor Jenkins Reid has written a tennis book. The protagonist, the titular protagonist, is called Carrie Soto.
Oh, fantastic. Mm.
Mm. Isn't she a like former champion trying to come back?
Yes, she is.
Yeah. Very good.
I'm learning
thank
lots
you, thank
today,
you very much. And Hopkins, well, my great uncle, Sir David Hopkin.
Yep.
Neither of you got anything better. So on that note,
just someone who I don't want to say.
Okay. Who?
Just a bad one.
Yeah, I know.
Sir Anthony.
No. No, he was like, well, let's go with Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carrie. Yeah, thank you to all of our friends of the Tennis Podcast. If you'd like to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast, the link to do that is in our show notes. You can also leave us an iTunes review, follow us on social media, like and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube. That's a new thing I've got to remember.
Yeah, my kids
lucky
told me that we've got to say that.
We will be back tomorrow with our post media day show around about 4:30, exact time to be confirmed. Look out across our social media for confirmation. And of course, from Monday, we will have daily live tennis podcasts on YouTube and available as podcasts wherever you get your podcasts as normal upon the conclusion of singles play on the show courts. So as soon as the meat and potatoes of the day is done, we will convene and we will talk about tennis, hopefully not right here, hopefully in the dry weather position over there, but in extremis we'll be here, and we look forward to seeing you there. We'll speak to you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.